say thank you for everything. I really had a good time, and I want to say thank you for this lady to get me here today. And well, I want to say about my dinner, who's gonna be on Friday at 7 o'clock at Bobby Jim's house. Well, and what else? Nothing. Okay. Just let me know who's coming here. Who's going to the dinner, please? Thank you.
What time is it on Friday, Susanna?
7.
7 o'clock on Friday, and where is it?
Bobby
and Jim's house, 7 p.m. Friday. And it's a dinner, and you're cooking the food?
Yeah.
Okay. And how much does it cost?
And also, with other exchange students, who's from Bolivia also, and with a chef at the Captain Cook, who's helping us. Thank you, Rochelle. Yeah. It costs $150 for each person.
How much?
$150.
$150, $150?
Yeah.
Okay. Good food?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
President Rick, fellow Vertarians, I would like to introduce the young ladies that brought Suzanne here, and they are my daughters. This is Lauren and Brianna. President Rick, Dave, fellow Rotarians, Michelle Drew, on behalf of the Youth Exchange Committee. As Susanna pointed out, I was very honored to be able to serve as one of the volunteer chaperones and serve in RC's place at the Winter Orientation, a.k.a. Shootout, this weekend. Although I did not get much in the way of sleep over the weekend, it was a very excellent, excellent opportunity to meet all of our kids, inbound kids, outbound kids, rebound kids, all of the other youth exchange officers throughout our entire district. It was a heck of a program, very informative, educational, and a whole lot of fun. And I just want to say that, you know, Susanna really did an excellent job of just standing up and representing our club specifically and really making Anchorage East look great in front of the other kids. She wasn't shy or hesitant to speak and had nothing but good things to say so far about her experience here in the United States. And so that was great. And then also, and I'm sorry, I'll try to be quick, I had the pleasure of meeting Colin DeGraff, who will be our 2010-2011 outbound student. He's a freshman at Diamond High School, and he is a fabulous kid, and I think he will do this club very proud as well. And the best part of the whole entire weekend, of course, is the banquet on Friday night when they do the announcement of which kid is going to which country. And Colin was selected to go to Hungary, and he was thrilled with that selection. So that's our weekend, and thank you very much.
Michelle, thank you very, very much for all the work that you and RC do.
President Rick, Sergeant Arm Days, fellow Rotarians, my name is R.C. Woodson, and I have five proud dollars for the Youth Exchange Committee, specifically Cleo for helping me get off my feet and get moving in the program. So please, a round of applause for Cleo. And then Michelle for taking my place at this year's Shootout Winter Orientation. And I have to say, of course, I'm going to call and see how she's doing up there. So I talked to two of the YEOs, and I called two of the hardest YEOs I could get a hold of, and they all had nothing but glowing remarks for the job that Michelle was doing representing our club. So, Michelle, thank you very much.
Thanks, RC.
President Rick, Sergeant at Arms Dave, and fellow Rotarians, my name is Jeff Blake. I have a happy $5 for the generous donation that Anchorage East Rotary made to Hospice of Anchorage just prior to Christmas, which helped them in their move, which you saw on TV this weekend.
Jeff, thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Jeff.
President Rick, Sergeant Dave, fellow Trojans, yes, I'm Rich Dyson. I have a happy dollar because this morning when I was doing my physical therapy, I happened to be watching CNN and I saw the some freight planes being loaded with the shelter boxes, and I saw the big rotary symbol on there, and I turned to my physical therapist and I said, you see, this is what rotary does in the world, and we started a conversation about rotary, and he's very interested now in rotary, and so I picked up a couple of these brochures, and I'm going to be able to give them to him, and hopefully he'll be able to join our club. And I do thank you, President Rick, for inspiring this. This is great.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick. Garrett.
Well, Sergeant Art Dave.
Rick Weisbrom, Mr. President.
Garrett Wong.
Just a thought, you know, on the Haiti money and these boxes, one of the things we've had, of course, is a real windfall here with the gaming account. And one thought that the board might consider doing, if we don't raise $1,000, is to carve out some of that gaming money. And this is sort of an accounting maneuver, but Clay and I have talked about it in the past, is you can take some of the gaming money and spend it on club activities and reallocate club monies and then reallocate that to the Haitian gift thought. So just okay. As a consideration.
Okay.
Anyway,
good.
That's it. Thank you very much. No wonder you're a financial advisor to Channel
good
2.
Good idea.
So. Hey, Dave, before you leave that table, Cleo?
Cleo.
Could you stand up a second? Cleo, as you heard from RC, Cleo has just done a wonderful job on behalf of our club for so many years, hosting exchange students and being part of the youth exchange, and besides just being a neat person and somebody everybody likes and a hell of a water skier. I mean, all of those things together are really pluses.
She has
been a great club member and somebody that we all appreciate very much, and she's off on a really exciting adventure, and Cleo is going now, she's going to be heading to Philadelphia to go to an international job fair, and she's interested in going off for a couple of years someplace in the world to teach, and she's not sure where it's going to be, but she's just going to go and do it. And so we're going to lose her as a club member. But, Cleo, we want to say thank you very much for being a wonderful, wonderful club member and a great person. Thanks, Cleo.
Absolutely. Hey, Cleo, when you get back, are you planning on coming back then to Alaska so you would come back and join our club again?
Of course. The best club.
The best club. Cleo, thanks for all your help.
Cleo, thanks.
That's what fellowship's all about. Okay.
Okay. Oops, I'm sorry. Diane.
President Rick, fellow Rotarians, Diane Louise. I have a happy $4, but it has to be an IOU because we just got back from Hawaii. On the plane, the $4 is for the four other Rotarians that were on the same plane with us. And when Karen Jordan discovered that Jerry and I did not have accommodations when we arrived in Maui, she actually gave me her cell phone number and offered their couch and their extra bed. I saw her husband grimace a little. I don't think that Rotarian roommates was on his plan for that Maui adventure, but I thanked her and we were well accommodated.
Thanks, Diane.
Welcome back.
Dave, I'll have to owe you. President Rick, Sergeant Dave, my name's Greg Solomon. I'm going to be your president next year. A couple of quick announcements. One to the board that is going to be serving next year. We have a little change, and that is Suzanne Yak and Diana Struck have agreed with me that Suzanne's going to continue as our membership chair next year. She's done a great job so far. We're going to see how she does next year, too. Thank you. And, of course, Diana, she's got her plate full, but she's the one who suggested this. And she thought, man, this gal can really cook. Let's keep her at the kitchen. No, I was there. Okay. She didn't say that. I said that. Okay, the other announcement is that...
Has a president-elect ever been impeached? I don't know if you can impeach a president-elect.
There's still time. Matt Dunk is going to be out of town for a couple of weeks. I'm covering for him. If you have anything for the newsletter or the website, please send it to me, not Matt. And that way his email box will not fill up. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah. Dave, when you're done here, Steve O'Brien has the no-fine button.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm working my way back.
Okay.
President Rick and fellow Rotarians, I'm Lynn Lloyd, and I have a proud dollar for the community of Anchorage, who came out in droves this weekend for the MLK Volunteer Day. And I participated with the legal community at the Mountain View Boys and Girls Club. We had approximately 150 attorneys who volunteered to give free legal advice to the community, which we estimated is about 10% of the active bar in Anchorage. And it was the biggest event that the Bar Association has put on. It was a great partnership with a lot of folks, and I'm just proud to be part of this community and the service that we do. So thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Okay, I'm working my way over to Charlotte.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, we raised $1,010 by passing the cup. So that's perfect.
Who gets the extra $10?
Well, Clay wanted to know if he could have change back, so.
Well, thank you very much. That's a perfect, just a perfect gift for the people of Haiti and a great help to them. Thank you very much, everybody who donated.
And then the other thing I wanted to mention is also on the tables, there's a flyer about Anchorage South's wine tasting on Thursday. It's a function they hold every month, but this month they're donating all of the proceeds to the Haiti Relief Fund, and it's $15. There's information on the table, so please help support Anchorage South and have some nice wine.
Thanks, Charlotte. Now we're down to Steve and his guest.
President Rick, Sergeant at Arms Dave, and fellow Rotarians, first of all, I'd like to introduce my lovely guest for today, one of the mothers of children in our school, and that's Christy Fagerstrom. Christy? Now, thank you. When Maria was developing her theories of education in the early 20th century, she was somewhat appalled at the industrial model, how it was inappropriate. One of the tenets of Montessori education is we follow the child. It's the developmentally appropriate education for how they develop. Everybody is different, as we all know, especially if you're parents. So we strive for that individuality. We see our program, our educational philosophy, as an alternative to sort of that lockstep industrial model that is unfortunately a little bit too common in the United States. We value the way that our children learn, and in order to support that, we need to do some fundraising. That's why Christy is here. She is our fundraising chair, so I've invited her to say a few words today.
I'm providing you another opportunity for charitable giving today. We actually are having a large event for Anchorage Montessori School, called the Auction and Casino Gala. It's on Saturday, February 20th. It's both an auction and a casino night, if you didn't get that from the title. But those are on the table if you're interested. We are selling tickets today for anybody who would like to attend. They're $25 a person in advance, $40 at the door. We're trying to get them sold before the event, obviously. We also are doing a split the pot, which I would carry around, but I'm one arm short today. Hopefully a little guilt to help spend some money. But I have lots of tickets. It's $1 a ticket. Basically, half the money is going to the teacher fund for the school to help the training. And the other half goes to whoever wins. You do not need to be present to win. So just all we need is a phone number and a name on the ticket, and I'd be happy to pass out tickets or leave it over here if you're interested. We also have an opportunity for those of you who might be interested in sponsoring a table, which would be a charitable contribution from your company, and we are a nonprofit, so certainly that can be used for tax season this coming year. And you can do a donation in the amount of $250, $500, and $1,000 if you are interested. And there are benefits to each level, which we can talk to you about individually after the event. If that is getting this way, I could go on for hours. So I'll stop there. But if anybody's interested, please let us know, and we'll leave this. I can walk around with tickets, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Steve. Okay, Dave, do you have anything else?
Nope. Okay. It's all yours.
Great. Okay, we have two new members to induct today, and they are Tim Tenney and Rowena Kerr. And to coordinate the induction is going to be Susanna Yak.
Great, so.
Do you need a mic, Susanna?
You write it on one.
Suzanne? Dave? Can we get a mic to Suzanne?
Well, thank you. And before I do that, I just want to thank everybody in our club who has helped with membership. And there are many, many of you who have either been the membership chair or been on the committee for membership. And I do appreciate it, especially Patrick who Brumley, who volunteered today to help me out with membership, because it is a big job. So, Tom Turner, do you want to come up here for a second? We've got two new members today to induct. And Tom is going to introduce Rowena Kerr, and then I will introduce Tim Tenney.
Fellow Rotarians, before I do my introduction, I just want to acknowledge how easy this is. If you have a new member, I was just happened to observe a golf club, and from that golf club we have a new member. But also, I was very busy in December because I had some pressing deadlines, and when I brought the new member in, Suzanne jumped right in that day, took care of the paperwork, walked us through the process. So, you know, I just want to encourage you, bring in new members, and she'll make it easy for you. So, today I'd like to introduce Rowena Kerr. She is the branch manager of Key Bank and is transferring into the club from the Gateway Club. And like I said, she's an avid golfer. Her goal is one day to play in the LPGA. She was born in the Philippines, 15 minutes from Clark Air Force Base, where she was the secretary of the Rotary International Clark Air Force Base chapter, which had several projects relating to free medical and dental services for the poor of the area. She's been very active in Junior Achievement Volunteer and has also worked on projects for Habitat of Humanity and for the Ark of Anchorage. One of the things that she does is she teaches basic finance to recovering alcoholics and drug addicted patients, and she has helped raise money for Beans Cafe. She met her husband while she was serving in the military, while he was serving in the military and was stationed in the Philippines. They traveled the world together before coming to Anchorage. They have two sons who are active duty Air Force and another who plays wide receiver on his high school football team.
Which team?
It's in Maryland. Okay. She is an avid golfer, like I said, and I think that one day we have to see if she can win in the thing. When I first met her, she was very enthusiastic, and she has high energy, but she was really enthusiastic for Rotary. She just was so excited. She was pleased the club was downtown, and she could walk to here. She brings a really good high energy level, and I think that you all agree she'll make a great member of the club, so give me a rousing applause and a warm welcome.
And I would like to introduce Tim Tenney. Tim came to our club from the Fairfield, California, Suisun. Is that how you pronounce it?
Suisun.
Rotary Club. He was raised in Maryland and educated at the U.S. Naval Academy. He has a bachelor's degree in economics and has three master's degrees. A little interesting note about his career. He's a lieutenant colonel. He joined the Air Force as an enlisted sailor at the Naval Academy Preparatory School, and then he attended the U.S. Naval Academy, where he was commissioned into the U.S. Air Force. So far, so good? Now, my paperwork here says he flies ... fill in type of aircraft. C-17. And he has served our country in 10 states and the District of Columbia. His volunteer activities include being the originator of Race for Good, which is a 5K race that benefited Fairfield's First Youth Center, and it was shown to have a measurable positive effect on the crime rate in the area. It's something that he hopes to replicate here in Anchorage and possibly with the involvement of our club. Tim runs between 50 and 65 miles a week, and he enjoys the arts, reading, and sailing. He's married to Andrea. He has two teenage sons. His classification is U.S. Air Force. And please welcome Tim Tenney to Anchorage East Rotary. And now to deliver the charge, Anne-Marie Boylan.
Rowena and Tim, you are both on the front line as the first two new Anchorage East Rotarians of 2010. Remember this as you embark. I stand before you linked with all those around me, for we are your Rotary brothers and sisters. You're both already Rotarians, but today you've chosen to be inducted as members of this particular club. I might guess that it was for reasons that have to do with this club's distinctive flair and sense of humor. I might also guess that it has something to do with the programs this club takes on, locally, nationally, and throughout the world. I might also guess that you chose this club because of the differences in this room and your willingness to act in concert with all of us, recognizing those differences as another one of our strengths. At the heart of Rotary is brotherhood. No matter what our differences, our common bond is joining hands in service above self. This week of extremes, we as a nation celebrated Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and saw the aftermath of horrible devastation in Haiti. Here now in this present moment, we take time to celebrate Anchorage East Rotary's two newest members, Rowena Kerr and Tim Tenney.
Anna-Marie, thank you very much for that. That was wonderful. Appreciate that. Okay, now I'd like to introduce Clark Mischer, who will introduce our speaker. I'd like to bring up Clark Mischer. I'm not going to introduce Clark. You guys know all about Clark.
And I grew up in South Detroit, and that was, hey, Mischler. I met Steve when we were trying to figure out how long ago. It was probably 25 years plus. But to give you an idea of how long it was, we both had not even a hint of gray hair. And his was down to his shoulders. Steve has a degree in history and education from Whitworth College. And I think the history and the education background is kind of interesting. With the intense interest in railroading has really kind of formed this man's background. Steve has been an incredible asset to Alaska, and specifically to Skagway, where he first came to work on the White Pass and Yukon Route Narrow Gauge Railroad, where he was brakeman, conductor, train dispatcher, and passenger agent all in one summer. And in 1986, he and his wife, Gayla, started the Skagway Streetcar Company, which unbelievable the tour. If you've ever been to Skagway, and if you ever go to Skagway, make sure you do this tour because it is one of the premier tours in all of Alaska. And on top of that, Steve has an incredible interest in music and is quite a musician and has performed thousands of performances in Skagway and has been amazingly, he's been on national television and radio and has had hundreds of different opportunities to sing on in various forms, including today's show. Steve pioneered the Vista Dome cars from the Alaska Railroad, and in 1988 he was hired as manager of passenger operations to reopen the Yukon Railroad that had been closed for over 5 years. In 1996, Steve built the Skagway Mercantile Building and Cafe, which is a historically detailed building in Skagway, and it houses the Excelsior Cafe and Bakery and a 158-seat clubhouse where he entertained routines daily. Again, I don't miss that opportunity if you go down there. In 2001, Steve became the president and director of the St. Kitts Scenic Railway Service and began service on January 28th, 2003, and has carried over 220,000 passengers since. You know, Craig read that thing at the beginning there about what kind of a person to be remembered as. I think that I had to say to Steve, I said, Steve, you've been a big inspiration to me. And a great friend over all these years. Please help me please help greet Steve Heitz.
Thank you, Clark. President Rick, members of Anchorage East Rotary, thank you for the honor to speak with you for a moment today. I'm Steve Heitz from Skagway. And how many of you have been to Skagway? Raise up hand, anybody? Wow, that's amazing. I thought that maybe we'd have nobody. We've all been to Anchorage. But not a lot of people get down to Skagway. If you do, in fact, to all you have been down there, Mayor Tom Cochran and the City Assembly, thank you. And on behalf of our community of 864 people, we'd love to have you come visit sometime and be a tourist for a day. Tourism, one of the five industries of Alaska, oil and gas, mining, fisheries, timber, tourism. Cruise tourism, the largest single part of Alaska tourism. In 2006, there were 1 million visitors came to Alaska by cruise ship. This summer, there will be a 17% drop in the number of cruise visitors to Alaska. We've lost three big ships from the three biggest cruise lines, loss of 140,000 berths. I am concerned about the downturn in cruise tourism, the like of which has not happened before in modern Alaska history, and the ramifications, I'm afraid, will have effects on most Alaska communities. How did we get from 1 million people, that number, and have that number falling in Alaska, while at the same time, tourism, cruise tourism, is growing everywhere else in the world? Everybody knows the story. Cape Klondike Gold Rush, Nome, Fairbanks, Stampeders, charge north. They fan out across the countryside. Port cities pop up to supply the mining communities in the interior. A couple railroads get built from the coast over the mountains into the mines. Tourists who hear about the excitement, they want to see the place, mostly very wealthy people in those days. They took the scheduled coastal steamship, sailed up the inside passage across the Gulf. They get on the Alaska Railroad, see Mount McKinley, get on a sternwheeler, Nenana, Fairbanks, go up River Hoo, Dawson, Yukon, back out over the White Pass in Yukon. Back through Skagway down the inside passage. They call that the Golden Circle, the Big Circle Tour around the north. And they could only do that because in the boom of the gold rush, that created all those docks and ports and railroads. That infrastructure was in place when the north got plunged into World War II and the Allies used it to build the highway. Using those ports, Skagway, Seward, Anchorage, Whittier, and the railheads at Fairbanks, Whitehorse, and Dawson Creek. But even after the war, when tourism started up again, the vast majority still used the coastal steamship route, the revised Golden Circle, replacing those sternwheel steamboats with the highways. Late 1960s, transatlantic steamships, ocean liners, all are gone, replaced by jet airplanes. A couple of people who owned the last ocean liners got an idea. How do we use our transportation assets in a brand new way? Well, we could run ships on like round-trip short cruises to warm places for people for a vacation experience. A young Israeli businessman in Miami named Ted Arison, he took an old steamship, marketed it as a party boat, and it would go out and sail around to 4 days in the islands of the Bahamas. He filled it up, and he created a company called Carnival Cruise Lines. Over on the Pacific coast, an entrepreneur named Stan McDonald got a vessel, a Canadian Pacific steamship on lease, ran it out of L.A. on the Mexican Riviera, and he ventured a whole season sending it to Alaska. He called it Princess Cruises. McDonald attracted British financing, built a set of twin identical ships, eventually nicknamed Love Boats. After a very huge, popular television series that they starred in and that highlighted the concept of taking a cruise. That television show put the concept of cruising right in front of Americans in their living rooms. You could see that cruising was not for the elite. You didn't have to be rich to go and take a cruise. It was a vacation that was really within anybody's grasp. You unpacked one time. Every morning you woke up, you're in a different port offering brand new adventures, all your onboard entertainment, your meals, all included in the single price. So while America was laughing at Captain Steuben and Gopher, Princess Cruises was sending a fleet of love boats to Alaska every summer full of brand new cruisers.
An Alaskan entrepreneur named Chuck West, who'd started in the industry in 1947, giving two lady visitors a personal tour of Fairbanks in his family automobile. He pioneered the concept of inside passage cruising using several former World War II naval corvettes that were converted to carry tourists. West's company grew, and West Tours began using Princess ships for some of their land tour packages, going through that same golden circle around through the interior and back out again. In the mid-80s, Alaska cruise tourism was blossoming, experiencing double-digit growth annually. More and more people heard about Alaska and decided to visit on a cruise. In 1986, there were 100,000 visitors on cruise ships through Skagway, where I live. By 2006, 20 years later, there were 7,555, a sevenfold increase. That kind of growth allowed for huge opportunities for entrepreneurs, gift shops, restaurants, sightseeing companies, package wholesale companies, receptive tour operators. Property owners and real estate agents could sell a lot to a developer who could build a commercial building, rent it out to somebody who had an idea for some tourism-related business. And every time somebody created one of those businesses out of thin air, the hardware store got business, the plumber got business, the bank, the gas station, the grocery store, the electrical and telephone companies. Everybody got business, and all of them were able to create new jobs, hire more people, pay taxes to their local city governments. And the growing cruise industry offered the engine that supported the economies of many Alaskan communities. The reason the cruise industry grew so quickly during those years was not because of people's insatiable desire to visit Alaska. Ma and Pa Kettle in Peoria, Illinois, do not know Alaska in 1973. Remember this. And you can't blame them. They're taught in school, Alaska is off the lower left-hand corner of the map. It's right off California. It's beside Hawaii. It's the size of Arizona. But more specifically, remember, Alaska is cold, dark, ice and snow, Eskimos and igloos. Fact. That's what they would tell us in every focus group that we do outside. We go to the lower 48 states. I go with Alaska Airlines. We're in behind the glass, you know, the dark one-way mirror. They're in the room with our lead guy. And our guy goes, well, give us the top six things that come to mind when you hear the word Alaska. You know? And they said all those negative things. The misconceptions about Alaska were absolute. How do you get somebody to choose to take a vacation in a place that's cold, dark, snow, ice, Eskimos, and igloos? You don't do that. You have to change the way they think about it. That costs a lot of money. And it certainly wasn't the people in Alaska who were going to pay for that change. It was the cruise lines and their marketing dollars. In 2006, the cruise lines that sailed to Alaska were spending a combined $75 million annually every year to market Alaska as a destination to go on a cruise. They were putting out Alaska in front of people on the television with ads showing blue skies, blue waters, white snowy mountains, glaciers calving, whales breaching, eagles flying, and happy people in shorts with cameras. These images were everywhere. Our television, magazines, newspapers, billboards, and eventually across the internet. $75 million a year. That wasn't being paid for by the state of Alaska. It came from the private marketing budgets of the cruise lines that came to Alaska so they could convert the individual consumer into someone who would consider Alaska as a possible destination vacation place. Why, Martha, just look at those pretty pictures, eagles and glaciers. Well, next thing you know, George and Martha are in front of the travel agent saying, you know, we saw that on Alaska. Tell me, how much does that cost to go there? If you did that same focus group in L.A. today and asked those six words to describe Alaska from that group, they will say wilderness, wildlife, mountains, glaciers, Mount McKinley, Inside Passage, and cruise. That is how the cruise industry has single-handedly changed the perception of the American consumer about Alaska. They convinced people that it was okay to take a vacation here. The Alaska Tourism Marketing Association, the ATIA, is the Alaskan organization tasked with marketing us as a destination. In 2009, they had a budget of about $12 million. The marketing message is intended to be generic, to get the word out about regions, communities, fishing lodges, bed and breakfasts, restaurants, hotels, attractions, and tours. The ATIA 2000 budget had $9 million in state money, $200,000 from destination marketing organizations like Anchorage Convention Visitor Bureau, $389,000 from membership from guys like me and Clark, and $2.6 million in cooperative marketing partnership money. Who are the biggest contributors to that? The cruise lines. $2 million of that money that funded the ATI generic Alaska marketing came from the cruise industry. This was in addition to that $75 million that they already spent. They did not have to do that. They did it voluntarily because they knew generic destination marketing helps everybody, especially the communities and the businesses and the little guy. The cruise lines put $75 million into marketing Alaska because if they did, they could fill their ships up. They could charge a higher per diem per passenger for an Alaska cruise. And because they were making record profits going to Alaska, they sent all their ships, their new ships, to Alaska as soon as they got launched. Brand new builds get publicity. Part of the PR buzz about a first destination for a beautiful new ship is it's going to Alaska. This helped focus consumer awareness and interest here. It built demand. It said, you want to go here. Alaska's hot. And all this helped build the cruise lines to get the highest possible prices per person for any of their cabins going to Alaska. The beauty of this is that's where the largest number of independent travelers to Alaska came from. Conversion studies done by ATIA showed 27% of the visitors who come to Alaska on a cruise return to Alaska as an independent traveler within 3 years. That is huge. Having first come on a cruise, 27% of those cruisers will return. They fly up, rent a motorhome, rental car, go to a fishing lodge, go hiking, drive the Alcan, stay a month, spend money. That's where the independent traveler comes from. And not from George and Peoria, who says, Marv, it's just struck me like a bolt of lightning. Go in the motorhome. Let's drive to Alaska. George and Martha do exist, but there are very few of them. The majority of the independent travelers to Alaska had been here. And what got them up here? The cruise line and the $75 million of all that marketing images. That's how we hook them. Like a Homer Halibut, you wrestle him up to the boat. He's a big one. He'll spend a lot of money, a lot of time. If he enjoys the second visit, we get him for a third. So we got 1 million visitors, converting to 270,000 every 3 years, and in the year is 2006. Okay? I'm not going to go into any detail about what happened, but I'll tell you what happened. A small group of environmental activists who are anti-cruise ship believed that the industry needed to share its wealth, redistribute that wealth, and they got a minimum number of signatures on a petition for a voter initiative and put it on the ballot. Voters focused on a head tax of $50 that would be paid by every person who bought a cruise to Alaska. But the initiative had 9 other parts buried right behind that. A new income tax, new gambling tax, new disclosure requirements for onboard excursions and retail, new environmental regulations that said the discharge coming out of a cruise ship had to meet standards that no Alaska city or town could meet, and no Alaska ferry or U.S. naval vessel can meet. I mean, especially these new strict discharge requirements for heavy metals were technologically impossible to achieve. Science does not exist to put the technology in the initiative onto a ship. The cruise lines lead the world in the development of clean onboard technology. They want to keep the waters where they sail pristine and healthy. If a region wants to regulate that, that is fine. But you need to be balanced about how you do that. You allow a ship to be grandfathered in as you bring on the new technology in a reasonable way as the technology develops. You don't just set up the bar and say, we expect the cruise industry to develop the technology and do this by such and such an arbitrary date. It's unreasonable and it's absurd. But that's what the initiative is forcing the cruise industry to do in the next 5 years. Invent the technology, put it on your ships, or face fines and legal action if those ships come into Alaska waters and dare to discharge. It is far simpler if you are a cruise line to avoid the impossibility of that and just not come to Alaska waters. The sponsors of that initiative knew all of this when they wrote the wording, but they didn't bother to tell you or me, the voters. And by a vote of 51% to 48%, the initiative passed. Not a landslide, but certainly enough. And since January of 2007, the initiative has been amended by the state legislature twice. It has raised numerous legal questions, and at this moment, the state is in federal court with the cruise lines as to whether the head tax violates the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. The question is not whether this is legal. Why is Alaska's 1 million passenger number declining while everywhere else in the world it's growing? The initiative increased the cost of doing business in Alaska for the industry. They were no longer able to get the kind of revenues they could get for the same ship in other places in the world. Every other region watched Alaska grow. Mediterranean, Baltic, Caribbean, Mexico, South America, Canadian Maritimes. They saw the numbers, saw the boom in economic benefits to communities. They all bought cruises. I saw them. They came to Alaska. They studied us. They watched how we did it. They took what we did home, put it into practice, planning the location for docks, infrastructure, retail, type of attractions and tours. Do it the way they do it in Alaska. They copied us. They copied our model. They went out and made sales calls on cruise lines, courted those lines, offered their region and destination as an alternative for vessel deployment on new itineraries. They became Alaska's competitors. Look at us. We got scenery, wildlife, history, colorful communities, culture, friendly people, and now we have docks and gift shops and tours just like Alaska. And best of all, we won't charge you a high tax if you come here. We don't have burdensome regulations that make it outlandishly difficult or expensive to sail in our waters. In some cases, we'll offer you incentives to come here so we can better compete with the other guy just down the street from us to get your business. We know everyone in the world wants your ships, wants the economic activity to go with them when they come to a region, because it creates businesses, jobs, pays taxes, and it will help the citizens of our developing country. Alaska is a developing country. And that is how we have to think about it. The world has copied us. We didn't see it. We're too busy deciding what kind of regulation and taxes we put on an industry that was bringing all those inconvenient tourists right to our very front door, inconveniencing us so much. Have you heard that from your neighbors? They're in the cafe, the store, the post office. They block up the sidewalk, taking pictures. I can't tell you how many times I've heard some Alaskans say they hate tourism because tourists are in the way. Hey, you know what? When I go to New York, and I got a rental car, I'm in the way. I mean, maybe we need to think of this like we all think of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. So when we put that cruise initiative on the cruise line's backs and they ran their numbers, they saw how much more it was going to cost them every year to sail here. And they began to plan to leave that very day to redeploy their ships to less expensive places in the world. It took 2 years to implement those deployment plans, but this summer, 2010, three ships are gone, and the cruise industry to Alaska is down 140,000 people. Two more ships are leaving in 2011. More may follow in 2012. This is no different than an automobile manufacturer in Detroit who looks at his cost of doing business. If I can make more money, if I can be more profitable for my shareholders, if I cannot get the people of Detroit to understand the reality of this situation, I will move my factory to Tennessee. If you are the mayor of Detroit or the governor of Michigan or a member of the Michigan legislature and you don't understand it, it's your loss. It is no skin off the automobile manufacturer. Really. I mean, he may not want to do this, but he will. He has to. It's about the health and survival of his business. The cruise lines do not want to leave Alaska. Alaska cruises are a good market niche, but they can make more money putting their ships in other places where they don't have those high costs and negative regulations. Alaska was hijacked by activists, and the proponents of the initiative sold the citizens of Alaska a bill of goods. They were disingenuous. They told us the initiative won't hurt industry. It did. It won't hurt anyone's business. It has wrecked businesses. It is hurting our communities, our neighbors, and in the end, it will hurt our state. We have driven an entire industry to the point where they've been forced to pull assets out of the state, remove their investment in Alaska. That's 180 degrees opposite from what we all as business people are supposed to do. We're supposed to go out and find capital, find investors, bring new businesses to our communities so we can keep them viable. We've done exactly the opposite by allowing this initiative to drive away the very business we need to have to keep one of Alaska's five basic industries running. If we want jobs for our children and grandchildren, if we want Alaska to continue to offer opportunities to them, we should reconsider this kind of regressive taxation and regulation of our industries. The tourism industry desperately needs your help. Please, if you are in agreement with this kind of thought, contact your state representative or senator. Tell them you are concerned about the future, that the cruise ship initiative has made Alaska uncompetitive, and that this initiative needs a very close re-examination to determine if it is really a law that is in the best interests of all of Alaska. Thank you so very much for the opportunity to speak to you.
Well, Steve, if you could just put a little energy into that, it'd be great. That was wonderful. That was very good. And just sort of a quick aside, Dave Young and his wife Sharon, Bobby and Jim and I, and one other couple took a cruise through the Mediterranean. And one night we decided we were going to ask the cruise ship on the Mediterranean what was their favorite cruise all over the world, because we wanted to do that next. And we all came back for dinner that night, and every person we asked said the Alaska cruise was their favorite. So the desire is there. We just have to accommodate it and make them welcome. So with that said, David?
And I absolutely second that, Rick. I mean, that is a fact. That's what they said. Their favorite cruise was the Alaska cruise. And these are cruisers, and they cruise all over the place. So, Steve, thank you very much. We have a drawing. We only have $23. Again, thanks to Jerry Winchester and Gene.
Who made the pot and won all the money.
Yeah. Thank you. Can you pick a ticket?
The number is 160391.
Rick, okay. If I could have your attention while Rick's coming up, I have two announcements while Rick's walking forward. One, on February 10th, we are going to have a change of venue. Instead of having our regular Rotary meeting here, we will have it at the Dena'ina Center for the Pillars of America. And all the Rotary clubs together are sponsoring a Pillars of America, which are two great inspirational stories. And we'll remind you again of it. But February 10th, we'll be meeting at the Dena'ina Center for Pillars of America. Okay, Rick?
That's a 8-foot putt.
The whole thing, all 23
eight,
bucks.
8-foot putt.
Oh, okay.
The pot is growing.
Okay, last thing, just as a reminder, we had a discussion last night at the board meeting. On meals, we have a lot more people coming in, so we have more meal revenue and, of course, more meal expense. But one of the things the board asked me to remind everybody is you can have all the second helpings or third helpings you want, but please don't take another plate, because if you take another plate, then we get charged for another meal. It's how the hotel rightly keeps track of how many meals we have and how many plates there. So just keep using the same plate if you want to have second and third helpings. And the $7.50 charge is actually a room charge as well as coffee. So if you're not eating, you do have that $7.50 charge. Thank you very much for Mary, real quick. Oh, yep, committee meeting, social committee meeting here. Go out and do good, have fun, and make friends. Thank you.